Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Ken Krimstein, artist, writer, and cartoonist. And we're talking about his new graphic book, Einstein in Kafkaland, How Albert Fell Down the Rabbit Hole and Came Up with the Universe. Ken, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Well, thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
How did you gravitate towards a graphic conception of your writing?
Well, it took a long time, but I've always seen words and pictures as the same thing. I tell stories with pictures, and then I just put words in to help it. I guess it maybe goes back to when I used to read Mad Magazine. You know,
I go back to when it was actually a comic. That's how old I am.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, I think words and pictures, but, you know, the interesting thing is, I put bread on the table in advertising for a long time, and I learned that, you know, from a teacher that I had, actually, that 1 + 1 = 2 = 3. In other words, if you don't repeat exactly what you're saying with the words and the pictures, but you have it add up, it's more. And that was the same thing that I learned from doing gag cartoons for The New Yorker. You kind of let the person complete the story, and so that's my thrill. That's what I love to do.
Before we talk about what's going on in this book, which is complex, talk to me about the evolution of your drawing style, because I found it really interesting. It's very impressionistic. Fauve.
I think I'm influenced, you know, I've always liked German expressionist art in every which way. Somehow or another, you know, I love the boldness of the strokes of people like Kirschner and Max Beckmann and those people and Chagall. And I find that just, it's like, expressionism for a reason. I can express feelings with it. But then from time to time, you can get tight with it, or you can. The other thing that I would call attention to that on this particular book that we're talking about is everything was done analog. I know I don't want to get too inside baseball, but a lot of times people use programs on a computer to make it look like it's drawn, which is, they're fine. But I went back to ink.
I love it. I love it, Ken.
Yeah, water, and what's cool about that is that when you put water on nice paper and then you put paint in it, it kind of goes in its own way, you know.
Yeah.
And that fit my feeling about what Einstein and Kafka were trying to talk about. You know, it's sort of physics in a way, how water spreads in you know, ink and paint spread in a water. So yeah,
I can really see that in your drawings of Kafka. Kafka is very German expressionistic.
Yeah, well, his face, you know, I had to, when you do these things, you have to find a way to simplify the character, especially if you're going to be doing them over and over and over again. And it's a kind of a process of caricature, and Kafka, happily, his face looked like a triangle to me, and thank God he had like a kind of a strong unibrow, with all due respect, and a very pointy face, which fit, and he had big ears, and strangely, if you go and look at a lot of photos of him, because he was kind of a natty dresser, he had kind of what we might call a bouffant hairstyle, so it just worked, you know.
It's funny when you see the two of them together, because in weird way, and I mean this in the best possible sense, it reminds me of like great comic duos, like Mutt and Jeff. You know, it has that kind of an element to it.
Well, how about Laurel and Hardy?
Hardy? Abbott and Costello?
Yeah. Well, you know, they were a little bit of there was a bit of a yin and yang in a serious kind of way, although I found a similarity. You know, I discovered this synchronicity, if you will, that actually Einstein and Kafka did know each other, did bump into each other, did hang out in the same circle, and kind of were pursuing, although one was, we would think of as a scientist and one we would think of as an artist, if you really scratch the surface, you're hard pressed to know which one was which.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but one guy, you know, had the buffy mustache and always a pipe and messy hair. And Kafka was a vegan, never smoked. You know, so they were in many ways opposite, but the same. So, yeah.
Well, let's set the story here, and it's an amazing story. The setting's Prague during 15 yeah. months, 1911 to 1912. What was Prague like at that time?
Well, Prague, you know, I joke in the book, and this is with all due, you know, apologies to people who may be from Cleveland, which I love. I love Cleveland. But it was kind of the Cleveland of Europe. It was industrial. Huh. It was a provincial city. It was German-speaking, a majority in the middle of the Czech Republic. It was a colony, if you will. But it was artistically very, very advanced. They were close to France in terms of art. They were the first place to embrace cubism, not only in painting, but in architecture. In fact, my guides, when I was in Prague, because I managed to get there during a lull in the pandemic, they said, oh, you got to see cubist architecture. I'm like, what? Well, there it is. So it was an island, if you will. And Kafka was part of a German minority. And that German-speaking minority had a kind of a majority of Jewish German speakers who were very, very assimilated. They didn't want to know from their history. They were modern. They were, you know, liberated. And it was a super progressive place, but divided with a lot of tension. And also, this is on the eve of the First World War.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was a lot of, they didn't know it at the time, but there was a lot of tension in the air and innovation. So, and Prague, beyond, I don't know if any you know, your listeners have ever, beyond this immediate period at the turn of the century, has always been just a completely fascinating city. I mean, Mozart was there, and then you had like alchemists there and scientists. It's just a extraordinary place.
And a very beautiful place, too.
It's absolutely beautiful, very preserved, very medieval, winding streets. But it's also, and I've heard it described as this, it's a layer cake because you've got medieval stuff, then you've got Baroque stuff, then you've got modernist stuff, all kind of cheek by jowl as you wind down these little cavernous streets. It's, well, I liked it a lot.
I gather that. Now, who's the narrator for this graphic treatment?
Yeah, well, so one of the incredible things about Prague is they have this 600-something-year-old clock that towers over the town, and it's one of these magnificent astrological clocks that, you know, has thousands of different dials and stuff on it, but it also has the characters that come out on the hour, you know, like that, you know, you used to see in the Disney movies and, you know, but on the side, they have a skeleton. Now, this thing's been keeping time for 600 years, and the creature that, or the figure that rings, that pulls the bell, that rings the hour is a skeleton. And I thought, wow, this skeleton, you know, is overlooking the building where Einstein and Kafka would meet. And I thought, what a perfect vantage point for a narrator. You know?
Oh,
so
man.
This was really cool. Yeah.
And I love that character. He's a great character, a great narrator in the book.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, he's kind of cheek and tongue in cheek a little bit. Sometimes.
Yeah, but there's a grim edge to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
he also is a stand-in, I think, for the reader because, you know, as you mentioned, some of the stuff can seem to be really complex. And part of my, as my mentor figure, the dearly beloved Sam Gross.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, Sam used to say to me, Ken, you're a cartoonist. Cartoonists know everything. So I plunged in. But the skeleton helped me explain some of the more obscure things about physics and literature.
I can't believe you knew Sam Gross.
Oh, Sam was my man. I unfortunately passed away recently,
yeah,
but yeah, your listeners may know him for his famous cartoon that he ran in the National Lampoon, and he'd sign it S. Gross, and it was like a frog on a board without any legs, and, right? And the couple's eating, and it says try our frog legs, and they look so guilty as they see the little frog without any legs. That's Sam. But the other thing Sam taught me was when I was coming up, because I was learning from him, look at the heavy stuff. And I didn't really know what he meant, but he meant that, like, if you're trying to come up with ideas, look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, go look at academic articles and stuff that might spur your thinking. So I like that too. So yeah. Sorry to digress.
Oh no, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, writer, cartoonist Ken Krimstein. And we're talking about his wonderful graphic book. It's beautiful. It's fascinating. Einstein in Kafka Land, How Albert Fell Down the Rabbit Hole and Came Up with the Universe. Now, Einstein at this point is sort of when it comes to Prague, he's 32 years old, and it's sort of a stranger in a strange land. I mean, he's a fish out of water. His wife ends up hating it. And he's got to come up with a job. He needs a job teaching. Now, he's already come up with E equals MC squared. But talk to me about Einstein at that point in his life.
Yeah, well, he's every man. I mean,
in fact,
he's every man, and he's nothing. He's considered a nothing. I mean, his theories of E equals MC squared and the other stuff that he had done was still very much under attack, super on the edge, and he couldn't even get a job, teaching high school in Switzerland, the reasons vary from he pissed off too many people to whatever, but he had two children, and it's kind of funny, he was a very ambitious guy, and the German university, there was a German university in Prague, a German-speaking and a Czech one, and the German one, he said, "Hey, Albert, we'll hire you, and we'll give you a brand new apartment with electricity and an elevator. Can you believe it?" And he's like, "Wow!" And a raise. They doubled his salary.
However,
and you have to do all this super hard work and be part of this bureaucracy, and you have to pledge. Get this. And it was, and when I found out about this from a biography that I actually bought in Massachusetts when I was on vacation at a used bookstore, they said you have to pledge loyalty to the Emperor of Austria-Hungary and wear a full military uniform.
It's the military uniform that just killed me.
Yeah, and with a sword, complete with a sword, and. And Einstein, if anything, was anything, he was a pacifist. So this is just so ironic. And I couldn't believe it. So, I love doing research. And I actually got in touch with people in Vienna who run like the National Historical Museum. And they found me a civil servant's uniform that he would have worn.
Whoa.
So, yeah, he's a nothing. He's a nobody. He's struggling. But there is this coterie of people that hang out. And when a new person comes to town, especially if they play the violin, they'd get their clutches into him. And Einstein loved playing the violin, loved music almost more than anything. So he became part of this salon where people would get together and talk. And
it's Berta Fanta's salon.
Berta Fanta, what a great name! I mean, reminds me of the cola but Berta Fanta. And she was the first woman to ever graduate from the university there. And this was a super interesting crowd of people that included philosophers. Kafka was in the crowd. His friend Max Brod. Kafka didn't play any musical instruments, but they would just discuss things. And whenever people, German speakers would come to town, or it sounded like an amazing, and it was, you know, within the view of the skeleton. But there's Kafka, you know, sitting in the background and watching this new character come in. And what was interesting about it, Mark, is like Einstein is getting ready to remake the universe. You know, he's got to figure out how to prove it, because in Prague they're all about prove it. You know, it's like
it's amazing. Like, there's a quote from your book: "Thought experiments don't fly in Prague." And you know, he's all about the Gedanken experiments. You know, these thought problems, and you illustrate them wonderfully, like tossing the ball up on a train. But man, was there blowback?
There was a lot of blowback, and there was not only blowback from the other people in Prague, but, you know, it's why I like, and I know it, you know, it might seem, you know, complicated, but I tried to make it like with a narrative drive, because that's why I kept it to 15 months, because I found a bad guy, quote unquote, an adversary. And I love this guy. His name is Max Abraham.
Oh, yeah.
And he was another physicist, but he had a very different take on it. And his goal, as he said, I found it in a letter, I will deal a death blow to relativity. And there were haters, big time. There was a guy in Prague who was a philosopher, and he said, your theories give me nightmares, you know. And Einstein had to find a way to prove it, which he did. He did come up with that when he was in Prague. So, but that added some additional dramatic tension. So, Einstein was embattled. And, you know, I'll just say something else when I'm doing the research. So I thought, oh, my God, I would love, because this is a different Einstein. This is a new kind of Einstein. This is Einstein everyman, Einstein the innovator, you know. And I'm trying to show how scary and difficult it is to be an innovator, and Kafka was doing the same thing.
Yeah, so Kafka. Kafka was writing his early works at that point, right?
Oh, He had barely been published. He was working at an insurance company, but he was a do-gooder. And actually, I found that he actually loved what he was doing, because he was helping workers, you know, to not, if they got hurt. You know, at this time in the early 1900s, industry had expanded so much that people were getting hurt a lot. And so he worked on protecting them. But he was writing press releases, but he liked it. He was writing strange stories and keeping his diary, which is incredible, some of his best writing. He was keeping it through this period. So luckily there was a lot of notes. But yeah, he was struggling to find what I call the true truth, as Einstein was. These two were just nobodies, I mean, who had a dream or a belief or a grasp. This is what I'm trying to, you know, maybe Prague was the secret sauce, but something happened, you know?
It is weird, and it's funny the way you draw Einstein, because he really looks like an everyman, like you mentioned. He looks like the kind of guy you could go up on the street and talk to. But he was having real problems. I mean, his wife, Mileva, she hated, why did she hate Prague so much?
Well, one of the reasons she hated Prague so much was, well, there were several. She had two young children.
Yeah.
She's a fascinating character, by the way. She's a brilliant scientist in her own right.
And you write, she deserves more credit than she's gotten.
She deserves more credit than she's gotten, though. In my opinion, there are people who come out and say he cribbed his ideas from her. I don't think it's quite to that level, but he did crib his homework from her when they were in college together. He acknowledged that. But she had some problems. She was Serbian, and the Czechs and the Serbians, you know, weren't crazy about each other. And she was a brilliant scientist, but she had to take care of the kids, pretty much. And Prague itself was an industrial city. Even though they had electricity, it was smoggy and sooty, and she didn't like it. She did not like it at all. And it and it puts strains, I think, on an already strained relationship. And, you know, when Einstein's letters kind of were published long after his death, about 20 years ago, the love letters between them were incredible. But it also was revealed that there was a child, a missing child that the two of them had. And no one really knows what happened, but we know that it was very, very painful. So, yeah, that relationship, I really had to put that in there because if you look at some of the letters, they were tight. I mean, they were really, really, they were collaborative, like maybe a really great love relationship, you know, John Lennon and Yoko Ono type thing, you know, really.
Now, there's other people and sort of ideas that crop up several times in the book. One of them, Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wish somebody had told me not to. No, I loved it. I mean, I guess I never really knew how much Alice in Wonderland influenced me. And then I was looking for a way in. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, in the past 4, 5, 10 years, everybody's saying, oh, I went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's right.
The internet is like the perfect rabbit hole, right? You go in and you just go down. But, right?
It is.
Like, oh, I went down the YouTube rabbit hole, you know, and I was watching, like, you know, videos of Chet Atkins, you know, from 1920, whatever. But, you know, Lewis Carroll was the person who actually kind of came up with that whole thing, down the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland.
That's right.
So I opened Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which was from like 1870, some 40, 50 years. And the first scene after Alice follows this rabbit and falls into a hole, it's almost exactly how Einstein describes gravity.
That's exactly right.
You know, and I'm like, whoa, this is really like, because she's, if your listeners remember, she's falling and she like grabs a cup off the shelf and it's empty and she puts it back. And it's like she's in this suspended animation world.
It's like a Gedanken experiment falling down that hole.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. And she's worried she's going to hit someone or she's going to fall all the way through the world. And, you know, I kept, you know, coming back to the audacity, and it was some statement that Einstein made, which just blew my mind. He said, well, I'm going to solve gravity. You know, I'm like, I said to my wife, I'm trying to solve getting a parking space. That's my biggest, you know. And this guy's going to solve gravity. He's going to fix the problems with Isaac Newton. That takes some boldness.
Hey, and, people are still trying to figure out gravity.
Oh, yeah. Gravity is... you know, it really throws, as the British would say, it throws a spanner in the works of physics. It just doesn't play nice with anything. It's a weak force, but it holds the whole universe together. And all you have to do is, like, drop something off the table. It works.
And it's, and like I said, I was just watching on YouTube several theoretical physicists trying to explain what they thought gravity was, and none of the three ideas was the same as another person's. So he also battles with Euclid.
Oh yeah. Well, this is
it's the flat versus the multidimensional.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the reasons that I kind of like doing these biographies in form, because you can show, you know, diagrams, you can show things that are in people's thinking. And, you know, I had to get tutored by, you know, people from the University of Chicago to even begin to figure this out. But, you know, for Einstein believed that, you know, we live in sort of Newton's universe, which is, you know, things are at a particular place at a particular time. But his theories kept saying, no, it can't work like that. It can't work like that. So he had a huge internal struggle. Now, the granddaddy, if you will, of math and everything, the only part of math that I did particularly well in is geometry, because geometry is kind of physical and stuff.
Oh, and, I totally understand this.
Right, and Euclid was the grandpa of geography, you know, and in order for Einstein to make his theory work, he basically had to chuck Euclid. That's, again,
huge.
You know, for a person who, because the implications of that, and I don't want to get too heavy on it, but if any of your listeners watch like Nova and stuff or whatever, the implications of that, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, so on, is that the universe is expanding and expanding faster. Like, wait a minute, how can the universe expand?
It's, you accelerating.
Know, it's just so weird. Yeah, and accelerate.
Okay,
so,
Ken, we're completely almost.
I'm sorry.
Hey, Ken, I thought it was great. No, I thought it was great. And the great thing is we didn't give away any of the major plot points, which is important. It's like how this all gets pulled together. You need to read the book. Ken, this kind of project must be great. You must love this project. The idea that you have to do all this research, the idea that you have to go to different places, it must be so much more rewarding and fascinating than just doing a cartoon.
It really is terrific, because real life is always stranger than fiction.
It's really true.
Cartoons come from, the best cartoons speak to us about real life too. And, you know, one last thing is, you know, I'm struggling to figure out what's the difference between fiction and nonfiction. And if any of your listeners have the answer, please have them get in touch with me.
Is this like how the Mona Lisa was stolen?
The Mona Lisa.
Say anything. We'll just tempt the listeners with with that, because that's in the book.
I would just have them Google the date. That's all. Google the date.
My guest tonight has been artist, writer, and cartoonist Ken Krimstein. And we've been talking about his very unique book. It's graphic, Einstein in Kafka Land, How Albert Fell Down the Rabbit Hole and Came Up with the Universe. And I hope we've whetted your appetite to get out and get this book. Ken, it's been a real pleasure.
It's been a delight speaking to you, too. Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.